found, but the people had moved on. There have not been any deaths reported in Vermont. So the belief is that people have relocated themselves, but these unhoused people remain extremely vulnerable, and there's tremendous concern about their fate.
We're going to have to leave it there. David Goodman, host of the Public Affairs podcast and radio show, The Vermont Conversation, joining us from Waterbury, Vermont. We'll link to your new piece in Vermont Digger, headlined A Flood Battered But Wiser Waterbury Rises from the Ruins Again. David is the author of, among other books, When the River Rose, Stories of a Vermont Town's Flood Recovery and Rebirth, as well as The Community Schools Revolution, just out last month. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
You can say that it's about the savages. You can say you have a better way to live. You can call it manifest destiny. You can talk of all your civilization will give. You can say that we're a thing of history, and progress is the future you will bring. You can send your armies to these mountains. You can say we'll prosper beneath your king. But there will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose. Because our future is not yours to choose. You can say you've got to stop the communists. You can say that our ideals can't succeed. You can say that competition is the only way, and a global system based on greed. You can call yourself a Democrat. You can call yourself whatever you will. You can keep on stamping out the fires you start, so you might stay on top of the hill. There will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose. Because our future is not yours to choose. You can say that all of us are terrorists, madmen bent on destroying all that's free. You can say that we are building weapons as your bombers fly from sea to bloody sea. You can say you're with us or against us, and to die quietly is what we now must do. You can maintain your innocence. You can say that you are many as you represent the few. There will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose. Because our future is not yours to choose.
And good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I am your host, Paul Rowland. Be with you for an hour. And I don't know if there is any longer any choice about our future as we see the world continues to burn and flood and in general spin out of climate equilibrium. while the global powers continue to play their sick power games, and the so-called left continues to be divided, dysfunctional, and generally dismally impotent. That's my view. And I don't know if it will start off a conversation in and of itself. We just heard, to start off the program, David Rofix, local political anarchist, singer-songwriter, who, I will just be very brief about this, and I don't intend to have a conversation about it now. It's very fresh. But yes, David was scheduled to be on the program this morning, and because of some accusations against him, some sort of internal left conflict, it's hard to describe. We're all just trying to kind of get up to speed. But someone accused him of possible harassment, etc. And we have to take these things very seriously as a station. And so I respect the management's decision to just hold off. Hopefully we'll be able to get him on. Because we have to protect the station. And it's all just, like I said, so for just in the last couple days, you know, people are trying to figure this out in real time. It's, you know, and, you know, we have a really new station manager. I really appreciate, Nathan, what you're doing and the difficulty you may have found yourself in with this. But again, I may have said possibly too much. I don't intend to have a discussion about this because the time for discussing it will be coming up. And so there. I'm sorry if that's sort of cryptic, but as I say, this is a sort of an ongoing thing, and we have to respect the process, as they say, and I do. So there. So with that said, I have an entire hour at my disposal to talk about whatever we want. So I'd love to hear from you. I do have a couple things. I really, really, really appreciated that conversation with the German leftist, real leftist, and Medea Benjamin, a real activist, talking about the desperate Ukraine situation, the terrible illusions that Ukraine can win this war in some sort of time frame that doesn't lead to the absolute total devastation that's already doing, and continue, as I have said repeatedly, to distract us from actually addressing the most impending, the biggest, baddest, destructive force ever to hit us in Homo sapiens lifetime, basically, the human caused global heating that is causing our climate system to completely spin out of control. And as I said, we continue to play these sick 20th, 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th, whatever, how far back century power games. And as, the man from Germany said, if anything, if there's any chance, I mean, he was talking specifically about Ukraine, to actually have the United Nations oversee a referendum process, for the Donbass and Crimea, a real referendum process with all the issues on the table, to have the UN, but the UN, which has been overseeing this whole Conference of the Parties climate talks process ad nauseum for decades and getting absolutely nowhere. No, we have to de-escalate the global situation, demilitarize the globe, stop fomenting conflicts everywhere, stop the hot wars, prevent any new ones from starting, and get a very real real United Nations structure, where we can actually, negotiate the very real problems. And then, you know, all the way down the line, you know, we need a very real democratic structure at all levels in our society, not just this fake electoral, system. We need very real economic democracy. We need the kind of democracy that we have no practice in almost. You know, some of us who have been involved in, you know, grassroots political struggles and been involved in various forms of, decentralized or bottom-up or consensus or whatever decision-making, you know, we've had some experience with that. By and large, we're just sort of floating in la-la land. Anyway, those are some things that I have on my mind. Of course, anyone really paying attention has been seeing that not only have the last however many years been the hottest on record, but I think, I don't know if we're still in that trend, but it's been like at some point in the last few days, you know, the last 5 days were the hottest in the last 100,000 years. You know, I mean, what does that really mean? It's something we ought to talk about. So here, I'm going to read from Inside Climate News. That's one place I go to get news about what's happening in real time in our climate. June extremes suggest parts of the climate system are reaching tipping points. Research shows heat domes, wildfires, and vanishing polar ice are the symptoms. Unabated greenhouse gas emissions are the cause, by Bob Berwin, written on July 4th, a week ago now. June 2023... And of course, it's really gotten worse since. It's ratcheted up. June 2023 may be remembered as the start of a big change in the climate system. Well, it started a while back, but with many key global indicators flashing red warning lights amid signs that some systems are tipping toward a new state from which they may not recover. This echoes a program I had a couple weeks ago about an article by some physicists who say that the climate system may be completely spinning into a chaotic state. Oh, one thing I did want to mention, that I also did bump my regular second Wednesday co-host guest, regular monthly guest, Jacqueline Keeler, from today to accommodate David Rovics, because, you know, he has to take care of his kids on a lot of days. And so, and she kindly did that. And anyway. So that's why Jacqueline Keeler is not on either this morning. She was on last week. Okay. Earth's critical reflective polar ice caps are at their lowest extent on record in the satellite era, with the sea ice around Antarctica at a record low extent by far, spurring worried scientists to share dramatic charts of the missing ice repeatedly. In the Arctic, the month ended with ended with the Greenland ice sheet experiencing one of the largest June melt events ever recorded. And with scientists reporting that June 2023 was the hottest June ever measured, breaking the 2019 record by a staggering 0.16 degrees Celsius. Quote, with the record warmth in June 2023 as a whole is now the odds-on favorite to be the warmest year on record, climate scientist Zeke Hausfather wrote on Twitter. Globally, the oceans set records for warmth on the surface and down to more than 6,000 feet deep throughout the month, with temperatures so far above the norm that the conditions elicited more graphs showing the anomaly. They've been shared thousands of times by scientists, policymakers, and the public. And in Canada, forest areas about the size of Kentucky have burned, choking huge swaths of central and eastern North America with acrid wildfire smoke, with some of the haze even reaching Europe. We've experienced that. Maybe we've all forgotten what it was like a few years ago with the terrible smoke. And what would it be like to experience that, not just for days or weeks, but for, you know, a whole summer maybe? What would that be like? Is that our future? Okay. There was record-breaking heat on nearly every continent during the month of June, according to independent climate statistician Maximilian Herrera Along with deadly late June heat in Mexico and the south central United States, extreme readings have been widespread in remote Siberia with hundreds of daily heat records, including readings higher than 95 degrees Fahrenheit close to the Arctic Circle. The heat will just get worse, he posted on Twitter. Herrera also tracks notable regional extremes like a historic mountain heat wave in Iran, where temperatures in late June spiked between 100 and 120 degrees Fahrenheit at elevations between 1,500 and 5,000 feet above sea level that are normally far cooler. During the first week of July, temperatures in Iraq are forecast to breach 120 degrees Fahrenheit. And it goes on, and I will continue to read from this. But I do see that it looks like we've already got a caller. So go ahead, Dee Dee, you're on the air.
Thank you. Combining the ideas about global ecocide, climate change, and changes with the last expected guest, I think it's really important that we protect ourselves from the addiction of arrogant self-righteousness, where we're judging and contemptuous of others, and we are playing into the divide and conquer. As long as we who care about the environment and social justice are always looking at everyone else not being perfect enough while expecting a lot of leeway and accommodation for our human imperfections, we're not going to unite as we need to across the political, economic, social, religious, and other continuums. And I just know so many people who have been very harshly critical of the expected guest, while they themselves, I know very personally, correctly, fell far short and were far more guilty of what they accuse him of. And it's very understandable that when we keep provoking folks and interfere with their livelihood and attack their character and their values, that they're going to snap back or something. And so we have to be very careful that we don't play into the hands of the fossil war surveillance bank industry that would destroy the environment, destroy democracy, destroy human health. We need to really be kind to ourselves as we grieve and fear what could happen. And the way we get out of that despair and helplessness, resentment or scapegoating and violence or fascism, is that we give empathy to ourselves. And we reach out and see that we're all in this together. That's how we prevent fascism. That's how we prevent corporate, oppression over all of us, is that we begin with that sense we're all in this together. We have empathy for each other, and we do the next kind thing, and then the next kind thing. And that makes it a safer world where we have the trees and vegetation we need to have in East Portland and less of the heat island. And that's how we move our money from the banks to community credit unions, and we grow food in each other's backyards. And that's how we address oppressive employers and landlords, so that there isn't a reason for fascism or for interpersonal violence or for the next oil bomb train explosion. So I just want to affirm some of the humor and wit in his songs and the humility and the compassion, and have us go forward with that. Through the years, okay. Paul, you have been exemplifying that, and I want to thank you.
Well, thank you. And I did say, you were very circumspect. You did sort of verge a little slightly into kind of talking more directly about this, which we really do need to avoid, as I said. And I appreciate your equanimity. Anyway, So yes, thank you for that. That was well said. And of course, you know, maybe it will turn out that there's surprises in this whole story, and that we don't know the whole story, and that things will come out. And anyway, I'm prepared for whatever. Yeah, and I'm not prepared to talk any further about it. And I would encourage other people to not do that, just to respect the process. And I know you have. So thank you, Dee Dee.
And really, you know, folks, if we're scared about climate change, let's work together to close down Zenith Oil in North Portland. Let's work together to take care of the radiation poisoning from Hanford. Let's work together to have more greenways and organic food. And I mean, there's things we can do here in Portland that will profoundly affect the world, and meanwhile, profoundly affect our own mental health and our sense of community as we become more resilient and prepare for a better world, because we're going to have some really hard times between now and then, and we need to prepare it. So again, it's through people like you and KBOO, and I just want to say thank you and best wishes.
All right. Well, that was a nice way to start off the conversation this morning. 503-231-8187. I actually did not give you that number. There may be some of you out there who are even first-time listeners, so welcome. This might be a little bit of a confusing introduction, but hey, welcome to the rough and tumble world that we live in. We are not immune. So this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Roland. I am flying solo today, and I would love to hear from new people who have never called in ever before and want to talk about, do you want to talk about it? Do you want to even think about it? It's hard, folks. What's happening? Do you feel like you've got your head wrapped around at all about the speed of the changes that we are going through on this planet? Yeah, Stop Zenith Energy is Dee Dee's plea. There's a lot of struggles. We've won a lot of them, but they just keep coming up. You know, I say we. I don't make any bones about it. I feel I'm a part of these movements. You know, this we're supposed to be kind of set ourselves somewhat apart and not make what they call calls to action. And, you know, I understand that. I respect that. But, you know, the world's burning up, folks. We have precious little time to, we've had very little time for quite a while now. And because we haven't really done much about it, the time just gets shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. Okay. So 503-231-8187. That was one thing I want to talk about. Another one, thing that's been talked about, I think it was, I can remember, was it late last week, I think? Or was it even Monday? I can't even remember anymore. But this double agents, fossil fuel lobbyists work for U.S. groups trying to fight climate crisis. Ha! Huh. That's in The Guardian that came out July 5. Exclusive new database shows 1,500 U.S. lobbyists working for fossil fuel firms while representing universities and green groups, so-called green groups. Among them, the Natural Resources Defense Council and the Environmental Defense Fund, who in, you know, months and years past, I have called out when I was talking about the nonprofit industrial complex or the big greens tied into the corporate Democrats who control mostly the climate and environmental movements. And look, they're in bed with the lobbyists. They got the same lobbyists as the fossil fuel industry, some of them. Baltimore, which is suing big oil firms for their role in causing climate-related damages, has shared a lobbyist with ExxonMobil, one of the named defendants in the case. Syracuse University, a pioneer in the fossil fuel divestment movement, has a lobbyist with 14 separate oil and gas clients. Quote, it's incredible that this has gone under the radar for so long, as these lobbyists helped the fossil fuel industry wield extraordinary power, said James Browning, a former Common Cause lobbyist who put together the database for a new venture called F-, quote, many of these cities and counties face severe costs from climate change, and yet elected officials are selling their residents out. It's extraordinary. The worst thing about hiring these lobbyists is that it legitimizes the fossil fuel industry, Browning added. They can cloak their radical agenda in respectability when their lobbyists also have clients in the arts or city government or with conservation groups. It normalizes something that's very dangerous. And it goes on to, you know, say some of the most progressive-minded cities in the U.S. employ fossil fuel lobbyists, environmental groups that push for action, including, as I said, Environmental Defense Fund and the Natural Resource Defense Council. I mean, they've been, those two groups in particular have been what I call neoliberal so-called environmental advocacy organizations. And, you know, ironically, both of them have actually won major court victories and done a lot of actual good, but it's completely muted, I would say, by their complete ideological blinders, their complete inability to actually see the nature, the real nature of the system that that they need to fight, which is true for much of, you know, liberals and the left, I would say. Okay, that's my high horse. That's, again, an article from July 5 in The Guardian. Double agents, fossil fuel lobbyists work for U.S. groups trying to fight climate crisis. But it looks like we actually have another caller. And again, you know, I thought about not even talking about, you know, the issue that arose, but I just couldn't. It was a little discombobulating for me, but, you know, I roll with the punches about, you know, my planned guest. But we just can't really talk about that now, okay? So if you do start to talk about it, I will actually have to cut you off. I know there will be a time to talk about it, though. And I'm assuming that we will get David Rovics on the air at some point. You know, are we capable, in general, whoever, of actually confronting this kind of, you know, somewhat complicated, somewhat, you know, cognitively dissonant, kind of a tension-inducing situation? Has the left ever really had the capability of actually, you know, does it have the coherence, the capacity, or even the willingness to actually address this kind of like so seemingly internal conflict? You know, that's a big question. That's a big question. So let's hear what Ron has to say. Go on. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting what you just said. It seemed like you kind of changed the scope of the discussion a little bit. And I thought about that, you know, based on what we just talked about, you know, prior to me coming on. But what I see in that is that, okay, we kind of touched on, you know, a lot of these groups, a lot of these conservative groups that seem like they have these agendas that they've had for a long time. The bottom line of the agenda, of course, is white supremacy and world hegemony, you know. And but, you know, just to try to keep teasing the population, you know, with, you know, they might bring something up that might be an issue that may relate to everybody, but, you know, but from the conservative side of it, you know, they're, of course, they have a slant more that it's an issue that's affecting them more, but they tend to present that in such a benign way to where they encapsulate all the people, even in the left. The people say, well, hey, I'm part of that too, you know? So, you know, and so what that seems to do is sabotage a lot of the efforts to a degree personally, that people might feel a sense of self. And so they may not commit themselves as much as they really could to really affect true change based on this, what we were saying, this dissonance of saying, this is you too. You see what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Well, you know, like for instance, like, you know, like you might have a person that may have thought that the George Floyd thing, yeah, that's terrible. Let's say, you know, we look at it in a racial perspective, say like a white person, and then they may think, well, you know, what am I really, though, you know, what is this, you know, trying to really achieve? What is this really achieving? And so the cloudiness of being able to see your efforts, your good efforts to the full, you know, has been effectively, I think, done by the dissonance of the right, you know, as far as like, you know, them just, you know, promoting a lot of the things that they think are important to them, but they're at the bottom of the, at the end of the day, they're not important for everybody, of course, you know, but you get people that are saying, well, this, you know, I'm part of this too. Like, you know, I've been kind of looked over too for jobs, or I've been, you know, looked over for, because of this black person, this person of color got this, you know, instead of looking at that as something that's, you know, like affecting everybody, you start to personalize that. You personalize these things, these issues and stuff, but then that sabotages your efforts at, you know, really trying to achieve, you know, change over a long period of time.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I'm saying, is that the right people, the people on the right have effectively promoted a message of saying, well, you know, my plight also includes your plight too. Like, for instance, the white survivalist. That's where a lot of this kind of points to, but you're not going to really hear the news stations present that, even though the news stations are considered supposed to be liberal. I don't really see that, because if that was the case, then I would see, you know, them as promoting some of the rationale behind these movements too. But they won't, because a lot of them feel like they're part of it, you know? So they're not going to say, well, this is truly how I feel, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the myth of objectivity prevents a lot of people from, you know, being able to actually, you know, express their solidarity or their opinions on the media, for sure. I mean, there's sort of partisan exceptions, I guess, you know, in some ways, you know, CNN, I guess MSNBC sort of seem to be sort of somewhat partisan, although when you scratch beneath the surface, they're, you know, really doing the bidding of the, you know, basically the corporate Democrats by and large. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. This whole issue of right and left is a little confusing. I thought the man from Germany on Democracy Now! Made some really interesting points, that it is, since the end of the Cold War, this whole right and left sort of, which seemed kind of clear cut. It never really was that clear cut, but it has really gotten much more muddied, you know, especially, you know, that the Ukraine war has really muddied things, because everybody just, you know, in some ways rightfully jumps to the defense of a country that was invaded. But really, you know, because of our, you know, I think basically lack of strong historical political framework and understanding, and, you know, a real strong analysis of the actual economic system that we live in, it prevents people from seeing the broader forces at work. And so, you know, you have like the Green Party of Germany, which was such a beacon, you know, of progressivism and of, you know, radical vision of change, you know, is now kind of reduced to basically supporting the status quo Western, you know, NATO view on Ukraine. So it just really makes it much more difficult. So it's always good, you know, the goddess bless Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, whatever their limitations, for continuing to have people like Medea Benjamin on to, you know, to keep some kind of clarity about, you know, what the quote left, you know, should be or does represent. Anyway, that was kind of
interesting. Well, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, that's, you know, and see, that's the whole thing. It's like this whole thing with this war. I mean, if you really look at it, I don't know the full history. I know a lot about some of the history in terms of the fascism, in terms of the commitment to what, the Third Reich, what is it, the Ukraine at one point, you know, in terms of, you know, wiping out the world, you know, for the supremacy. A lot of people don't even realize
that. It was complicated. I mean, there's, you know, there were different people were on different sides in Ukraine. It was incredibly, and, you know, just can you imagine what it might have been like to be forced, you know, some people had to like actually accommodate the Nazis just to survive, you know? I mean, that was just a reality for people, you know? It's like when you're up against that level of genocidal fury, yeah, you know, the choices you have to make are just horrible choices. So, you know, a little bit of slack needs to be given. But, yeah, but there's a very real history of collaboration with the Nazis in Ukraine, which is part of the mix, part of the history, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, what's that?
Isn't that the subterfuge about it? That's the whole subterfuge about it, is that the bottom line just supports what I said. The whole overall objective, and that was the white supremacy in the end. That's what I said, and that was my premise.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Well, if you're done, we got another caller, or if you want to make a final point.
Yes, I am done.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Yeah, I mean, as a white person, as a European, I don't want to make it sound like I'm making any, you know, I'm saying but or equivocations or whatever. As a self-styled, you know, radical, I do think that we have to always include, you know, the capitalism is not completely, you know, co-extensive with white supremacy. I mean, they're completely related, because the capitalist system was instituted out of the genocidal white supremacist expansion of Europe, which created the capitalist system. So yes, of course. But the dynamics, anyway, I'm probably way over my head. Maybe our next caller, I suspect, might want to weigh in on that point as well. Anyway, 503-231-8187. We've only got about 20 minutes left. James, you're up next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The minds of those of you on the left are owned by imperialists, and your egos are too large to face it.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'll give you a minute at least to defend that statement.
One of the main tactics the ruling class uses is to take a particular faction and then equate it with a faction that is the antithesis of said faction.
So that's a general statement.
Yeah,
what do you mean specifically?
That is a tactic the ruling class uses. For instance, the ruling class created the progressive faction and equated it with liberalism.
Wait a second. Okay, give me what sort of historical basis are you talking about? The ruling class created the progressive faction. What is it? Where, when, how? What do you mean?
You can look at the actions of the progressive faction that transferred control of the means of production from the people to the state, which enabled the ruling class.
No. I'm talking about actual history. Give me some actual history here. Give me, you know, where, when, who, how, why.
I am giving you history.
No, you haven't said. You continue to talk in generalities.
Your mind is owned. You are not capable. You don't. You lack imagination.
No,
and as long as you lack imagination, you're never going to get out of this hole that you're in.
Okay, but you still haven't given me, you know, like where, when, how, who, why, what do you know, what happened? What ruling class instituted the progressive faction? Where, when, and how did they do it?
What ruling class? You mean that there's more than one ruling class? Are you suggesting there's more than one ruling class?
Well, throughout history, sure. There's monarchies, you know, then the development of capitalism. There are competing elements within the so-called ruling class, sure. It's not a monolithic thing.
This is another example of how your mind is owned. There is only one ruling class. Right. There is a cult. Called the Cult of the Black Sun, which has ruled this planet for thousands
of
years.
All right, that's enough, James. I was afraid we might head in some sort of the Cult of the Black Sun. Okay, well, that's the ruling class. And where do they start? When? Anyway, wow. I thought maybe that was a different James, which is why I said maybe they wanted to talk about that. I thought that might actually lead somewhere interesting. I was prepared to actually have a legitimate debate. You know, and there, you know, there are thinking people on the so-called right, you know, who do have some grasp of history and reality and facts. But the cult of the Black Sun, actually, I'll have to write that down. The cult of the, anybody else, anybody familiar with this particular conspiratorial rabbit hole, the cult of the Black Sun? All right. Well, you know, it's interesting. At least he listens to KBOO. Are you a contributor to KBOO, James? That would, you know, we'd appreciate that. Okay, let's see. Who do we have up next? 503-231-8187. Always interesting. But I didn't quite expect that one. Cult of the Black Sun. That's just going to be sort of resonating with me all day now. There is only one ruling class, and it is the Cult of the Black Sun. Okay, 503-231-8187. Please, please, somebody else call. It looks like we may have one. Okay, so I was talking about reality, that nearly every new study implicates human-caused warming as measurements of winds and currents show how the global temperature increase has pushed the Antarctic wind belt poleward, which also shifted relatively warmer water closer to the icy edges of the frozen continent. It may not be frozen much longer, folks. Other recent research shows that the southern ocean encircling Antarctica and extending northward to 60 degrees south latitude stored a disproportionately large percentage of the heat trapped in the atmosphere by greenhouse gases and then absorbed by the world's oceans between 2005 and 2017. It goes on and on. Okay, this is an article worth reading. The headline for this section of this article is Antarctic sea ice decline has a cascade of impacts. Then there's a heat dome settles on North America. Everybody remember the heat dome a couple years ago here in the Northwest? How utterly mind-bogglingly horrifying that was. Well, large parts of Mexico, the southwestern and central United States, and Canada have been having that. Are we going to get another one? Okay, that's about enough. Wow, all of a sudden we got a couple callers. Let's go to Robert. It'd be, Kyle, you know, I love the way Dee Dee started this off. If there's any women, if I see you on stack, I will put you to the top of the stack. Affirmative action. So please call in. But let's hear what Robert has to say. Go ahead, Robert. Hello?
Great show. This is Robert. Great show.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Let me just kind of wrap up what I think what James was trying to say is there is a ruling class which I call the cabal, and I think their primary goal has always been to divide us all. I think whether you're on the right, left, middle, we're all human beings. We all want good luck. We all want to love one another. But the cabal constantly divides us because a divided nation, divided people will fall. Can you characterize
the cabal?
The cabal has been characterized as who they are. They are the and you're going to laugh at me here, but the Rothschilds and Rockefellers who have been trying to take control of our...
Oh, the Rothschilds.
Our health system. They've controlled the bank, Federal Reserve, the IRS. And we're going to soon see these institutions annihilated, where we're going to live in freedom once again as not only Americans, but as the world.
Okay, so we got two...
And you're going to see the real truth about what's happened in Ukraine. And what Putin is doing there is he's exposing the evil that's been in the Ukraine for so many years, especially from a lot of our politicians.
Okay. So the cabal is the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. So you think there's like a international Jewish conspiracy?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. This is a very demonic Luciferian system that's been controlling the earth.
So we're back to the cult of the Black Sun. Okay, I'm sorry. I just can't go on with this. Thank you, Robert. I don't know if you two know each other, but wow, that's two in one program. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to have an hour-long discussion about, you know, the demonic Luciferian system and the cult of the Black Sun. But I don't know. I just don't have the stomach for it. So I don't know. Maybe Mark... will take us in a different direction. Go ahead, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for your resilience. I think an hour-long discussion would make our blood pressure soar.
I think
so
you might be right.
We'd all be bipolar, very distrustful of everything, kind of nihilist, and that's not a happy ending at all. I wanted to, first of all, focus on the need for taxing the rich in order to gain the resources to become a sustainable, caring society. The CEO of Amazon earns $212 million in 2021, and that's 6,470 times the average worker. It, you know, used to be 50 to 1, and now the CEO pay is out of control. And if our government can't respond and tax the corporations and super rich, then it is inept and inert. It's like a cult of a black sun, you know. Now, I also want to recommend two concrete websites. One is geopoliticaleconomy.com, where you will be able to hear Michael Hudson and Ben Norton, who are very capable, very erudite people, talking about the geopolitical realities and the zombie economy that runs on credit and creates these crises of financial markets, creates bubbles that also lead to inflation. The other website is thephilosophicalsalon.com, where you'll be able to learn about emergency capitalism and how one emergency seamlessly follows another, and the Fed is ready to print hundreds of billions of dollars for that next emergency. So it's very important to face the structural systemic problems and to learn from people like Michael Hudson, Ben Norton, and Fabio Vigli on the Philosophical Salon about emergency capitalism and how the financial markets, who made themselves independent, who take resources from the real economy, are really a major cause of our plight, of our helplessness. What do you think of that?
Oh yeah, totally, definitely. I you know, as far as it goes, I mean, you know, I think, yeah, as far as policy changes, you know, those sort of policies. If we had, you know, if we had a Roosevelt, I keep flashing back occasionally. You know, he did save the capitalist system essentially, and you know, he was kind of a hinge figure, which is, you know, not good ultimately. But you know, he was a figure that really did actually institute like the most amazing series of policies that blunted the capacity of the wealthy to amass and deploy their ill-gotten wealth to the detriment of everybody else.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, since then, it's sort of all eroded, and the whole, you know, liberal safety net, welfare state, et cetera, you know, semi-socialist has all kind of gradually withered away. But
yes.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, sure. I mean,
he did so much in his first 100 days. He actually closed the banks, you know. And
yeah, that was in that's one thing the real granular nature of that whole history, I guess I never studied or wasn't, you know, paying attention in class, but CNN or I guess, I don't know if it was CNN or Netflix, or there was a documentary on it. I think it was CNN recently that was quite good. Anyway,
The U.S. actually was the first country to initiate progressive taxation and Social Security. And that's that. Of course, our corporate media has been very slow
of course, none of it's good enough that we actually have to abolish the capitalist system? And is it, it's even possible that some of these reforms actually, you know, make it more difficult to do that, which these are very difficult questions, but they also have the other possibility of giving people more breathing space. The people, you know, the actual real oppressed people, people of color, poor people, they give people a little breathing room to actually get their heads above water for a while and maybe actually start to be able to, you know, organize together and make a better life and feel a little better about themselves and their, you know, create better communities. Anyway, yeah. So,
so money might actually go to people instead of advertising.
Indeed. Well, listen,
now,
we got
to... the Global South will teach us humility because they're much stronger than they were 5 or 10 years ago. So we can't go on as the world policemen.
Right, and you know, I mean, as I had on a couple guests on to talk about the Colombian president of, you know, last year, the left wing, and now Lula has been reelected in Brazil. There's a, you know, a real what they call a pink wave. There's been several over time,
and
there's, you know,
there's China.
There's been a call to you know, to end the Monroe Doctrine. To, you know, Juan Gonzalez on Democracy Now! Was talking about that, to, you know, to actually, you know, have the progressive forces of the United States, such as they are, actually unite with the these real grassroots, actual people's left-wing movements in South and Central America and really do so. But we got another caller, Mark, and only a few minutes left.
Okay.
So thank you, Mark. 503-231-8187. As I said, it'd be nice to hear some women to call in, but you know, so I can't ask, you know, people necessarily to you know, not call in if you want to call in, because, you know, we have three lines, so several people can call in and be waiting at once. Anyway, this kind of conversation morphed in its own direction, as they often do. So excuse me, let's hear what Joe has to say. Go ahead, you're on the air.
I don't have time for a long comment, but in light of the ongoing situation with climate change and what is to be done, I'd like to point out that there is a very interesting series of articles coming out in Monthly Review, the noted socialist magazine that Albert Einstein famously wrote his What is Socialism essay as an inauguration to. It's got a series this summer on degrowth and kind of eco-socialist strategy. It's, I think, interesting that this is kind of the first major left publication to, like, be openly embracing degrowth. I mean, with certain critical engagement, but essentially saying that this is something that socialists and the left need to integrate into their analysis of what changes need to happen and how.
But do we have to seize the mechanisms of the power of the state in order to institute degrowth?
I think that there are different inroads that happen at different levels of social organization. For example, if we're talking about instituting more public services, there's a variety of levels of local and regional government that are far closer to the popular hands than the national governments, and people can make projects out of those low-hanging fruits.
Like you've talked about this in the past, and, you know, public transportation stuff, and, you know, there's been small victories in Portland, you know, fighting fare increases and stuff like that. And but the big one is to make it all free, which would really actually maybe put a dent in, well, you know, that along with some, like, huge, you know, way beyond the, like, these semi-cosmetic, you know, more bike lanes and, like, those, you know, little islands and, you know, the way they're rearranging the streets to try to make it friendlier. But, you know, I've heard that bicycle traffic has actually gone down. But anyway, you know what I mean? There has to be, like, major structural changes in addition to making public transit free in order to, you know, make it so that working people can actually not have to all use the cars anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm just suggesting people look into this because it's we need a theoretically informed perspective to then ask ourselves, of all the things that are going on in the world, what do we want to do and how do we want to approach what we have to do? And it's not necessarily saying this is going to be a blueprint, go read it, and then show up at the meeting and we'll get stuff done. That's not how anything happens. I'm just trying to encourage what I think is a fruitful engagement with the right thing.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you. You actually kind of made me breathe a little easier. I don't know. I get, you know, maybe it's not good for me to focus so much on the speed of the doom and gloom and to actually, you know, because I was, you know, that vision, the vision you're talking about, that's been my, you know, we talked about in person not too long ago, you know, like Ivan Illich and his vision was very much that. And so that forms me. And it's hard for me. I find it hard to get back to that. The, you know, the decentralist, grassroots, people-based, you know, approach to actually making real change. And and Portland could be a great incubator for all that. Anyway, yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Always good to hear from Joe. Oh boy. So, Mary, okay. Looks like we have another caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hiya.
Hi. Interesting conversation. I heard the definition of wisdom is to start taking things away. So I think maybe people ought to start thinking about living in a city and individual cars need to go. So just trying to encourage people that, you know, we can't start mining all over the world so we can have batteries so people can have these cars that now need to be on a leash. So, that's what I think is very important, is start thinking about things we can actually do that are absolutely not essential. And
the problem is, though, these mechanical beasts that we've become so utterly dependent upon over the past 100 years, that as a result of both public policy, you know, the highway system and the roads are, you know, are built by federal, local, and state governments and mm-hmm. maintained, you know. So,
you know, Paul, do you know why the highway system was built? And it wasn't, when I was born in 1957, and then it was right after that. It was Eisenhower said that we needed to widen and have highways and widen all the roads for tanks because we were going to go and fight the Russians.
That's interesting. So, I think I've heard something about that. It's probably not the whole story.
That's a big part of it. Okay. So, we don't. The highway system itself, just bringing people faster and faster to places.
Indeed.
Quicker and quicker.
And there's still on the table the expansion of I-5, and it looks like, you know, at the Rose Quarter, and looks like they're going through with it. But we gotta close this out. Mary, thank you for calling in with that, as
okay.
always. I just want to say, so the black sun is a symbol, originating in Nazi Germany and later employed by neo-Nazis and other far-right individuals and groups, blah, blah, blah. The symbol became known as the black sun, that later became known as the black sun, originating in the early 20th century, with the first depiction being the blah, blah, blah. In 1933, Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, acquired a castle near Bohr, intended to make the building into a center for the SS. Anyway, the Black Sun has been associated with Nazis and neo-Nazis. Whether or not that's exactly... the Ukrainian Azov Regiment, founded in 2014, used the symbol as part of its logo. So interesting. I don't know. There seemed to be some real incoherence on the part of our two right-wing callers who are talking about the Luciferian global cabal, and the other one you talked about, the cult of the black sun. I'm sorry. I got to get this out of my mind. But I did want to kind of flag that those associations are not good ones, if anybody had any doubts. So, looks like we're pretty much out of time. Maybe we'll go out with a little Fabrizio De André. I wanted to use it. This is the song of May Canzone del Maggio, which says we are all involved, no matter what we think, we are all involved. Siamo tutti coinvolti. Ciao tutti, this is Paul. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Thanks, Ty, to be on the board. Bye, everybody.
Anche se il nostro maggio ha fatto a meno del vostro coraggio, se la paura di guardare vi ha fatto chinare il mento, se il fuoco ha risparmiato le vostre 1100, anche se voi vi credete assolti, siete lo stesso coinvolti. E se vi siete detti, non sta succedendo niente, le fabbriche riapriranno, arresteranno qualche studente, convinti che fosse un gioco a cui avremmo giocato poco, provate pure a credervi assolti, siete lo stesso coinvolti.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being
held. Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach.